Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, May 11th edition of the Bettors Box, bangthebook.com's MLB betting podcast presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you go over to DSI Sportsbook, use the promo code BTB Radio. It's good for a $10 free bet just for signing up and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. I am your host, Adam Burke, coming to you every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday here with our summer schedule on Bang the Book Radio. As you know, Monday is the Bettors Box and the Monday Mailbag. Tuesday, the Tuesday Takeover Show. We had a good one with our buddy Kyle Hunter of SmarterSportsPicks.com a couple of days ago. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, please make sure that you do. And then, of course, here on Thursdays, regular editions of the Bettors Box. Tons of great stuff going on over at BangTheBook.com right now, including those three contests. You got the Daily Streaker Contest, Monthly Pick of the Day, then also some prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and also top units won. Cash prizes for those, just sign up for an account over at bangthebook.com. Like I've told you in the past, we don't send you a bunch of spam emails or anything like that. We just want you to get involved. And then while you're over there, use the data that we provide to help yourself out. We've got our matchup data section. We've got all kinds of breakdowns, last 3 years, last 10 years, home road splits, all kinds of stuff there with that. We've had my picks and analysis piece, which goes up every day. If you subscribe to the notifications, you know when that goes up. Daily fantasy there as well. I'll have some series previews coming out for the conference finals of the NHL playoffs. Nashville and Anaheim in the West, Pittsburgh and Ottawa in the East. Those should be coming up here today. I've already covered the Go Bowling 400 this weekend for NASCAR. We got golf stuff every week. Good buddy Tom Wilkinson's put up the UFC 211 preview. So tons of content over there at bangthebook.com for you to take advantage of across all of the markets. I also threw up a piece. Some NFL season win totals have been put up at Bet Online. Threw up a piece on those yesterday with the odds and also some of my early thoughts. Of course, we're still a little bit less than 4 months away from the start of the NFL season, but never too early to be thinking about the pigskin. And we're certainly doing that here on Bang the Book Radio with a look ahead to when we get to the month of August, going back to our daily format. So that'll be something for all of you to look forward to. All right, so as far as the baseball stuff goes today for this edition of the Bettors Box, we'll go beyond the box score. I'm going to analyze some bullpens a little bit here today. We'll go down the lines, look at the line moves that have happened from when we were last on the air on Monday's show, including my pick for Thursday night's action. Then for today's sabermetric stats, I'm going to look at some plate discipline metrics. I've been talking about those in my write-ups. Also been looking at those here a little bit on the show. So I just want to dive a little bit deeper into that. And then finally, a preview here of the weekend. So let's get going with this edition of the Bettors Box. First, we'll go beyond the box score. Look at the little two-game sweep here between the Seattle Mariners and the Philadelphia Phillies. Mariners, 21 runs scored over the two games in this series. I told you this a couple of weeks ago, that this Mariners lineup had too many good hitters, particularly in the middle of the order, to be struggling as much as it was. Now, this is a Mariners team that scored 21 runs largely without the services of Nelson Cruz, because this series played in a National League park, so it was either put him in the outfield or use him as a pinch hitter. But some of the primary bats really getting it going here for the Mariners. Kyle Seager, very, very slow start. Still not hitting for a whole lot of power, but he's up to 266, 366 on base, 385 slugging. Robbie Cano, 296 average, they're 362 on base, 533 slugging percentage. They've found something in Ben Gamble to bat second against right-handed pitchers. Gene Segura's back at the top of the order, and he looks good. Guillermo Herrera, deepening the lineup a little bit here. Good bat-to-ball outfielder, playing some good defense in left field as well. So the Mariners' offense is a group that I'm looking to buy here as we go forward. I think Gamble can sustain some of this. I got a good look at him when the Mariners were in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago. He was just spraying line drives all over the field. And that's something that's a really good thing for a young hitter, because it makes it hard for pitchers to adjust. You know, guy rips a ball over the left fielder's head in the first plate appearance. You try to go inside in the second one, he yanks a ball down the line. You know, those are really impressive things for young hitters, and they make it very hard for pitchers to adjust. So if you get a chance to watch some of these younger hitters, get some video of some of their plate appearances and see what they've been doing, you know, you can see if those are guys that are going to be in line for a drop-off or not. So far, Gamble looks like a guy that can use the whole field and use it with authority. So that's a nice little addition for the Mariners there. You know, they've had some offensive pieces that haven't really worked out. Danny Valencia is off to a slow start. Mike Zunino's back in the minors. But the key components of this Mariners offense have gotten it going. That's why the Mariners, after such a disastrous start, are now a 500 team. They have, however, lost Tsuchiya Iwakuma to an injury. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing for them because he didn't look very good anyway. But when you consider that four of the projected starting five for this rotation are out now, with Iwakuma, King Felix, James Paxton, and Drew Smyly, injury attrition is getting to be a very big deal here for this Seattle rotation. The bullpen's gotten a little bit better. They've settled in, especially some of the guys in the primary roles. When you look at this Mariners rotation for this weekend against Toronto, Chase DeJong, Christian Bergman, Dylan Overton, and Ariel Miranda. Even the San Diego Padres think that that rotation sucks. So the Mariners have to be an over team going forward in my mind, first five overs, full game overs, stuff like that, until they start to get some of these pitchers healthy. But I am buying this Mariners offense. I think that this is what I expected from them, and this is the type of performance that we should see. Obviously not 10.5 runs per game, but this is the performance we should see throughout the rest of the year, where they're an above-average offensive ball club. On the other side, though, you've got the Philadelphia Phillies, who are really disappointing to me at this stage of the game. Loved the Phillies last year, took their season win total over. That one came through. Some of their underlying metrics, though, Pythagorean win-loss and base runs, painted a little bit more pessimistic of a picture. When I look at them here this season, Gerard Eichhoff, a guy I've talked about a lot, a guy that I really like, he's having some issues in the middle innings here. You look at his last start against Chicago, he tailed off there in the bottom of the fifth. You look at his last start here in this series against the Mariners, started okay, but then didn't pitch real well in the middle innings. That's a problem. You know, you have to be able to make adjustments. I don't know if I haven't looked at the PitchFX data. I'm hoping he's sustaining his velocity, because if he's not, that could be a symptom of an even bigger problem. But Eichhoff has not pitched as well as I had hoped. Aaron Nola is still on the disabled list. Jeremy Hellickson overachieving in a big way. Vince Velasquez, very inconsistent. All of a sudden, this Phillies rotation, which I thought had five average or above starters, starting to look like a little bit of a problem area for them. Again, it's early. You don't want to overreact to some small sample sizes here. But until Aaron Nola gets back, the Phillies rotation, definitely a pretty iffy proposition, to be sure. However, their offense looks pretty good right now. Aaron Alther is just raking all over the field. Mikel Franco, one of the unluckiest hitters in Major League Baseball so far this year. That's per all the metrics. BABIP, his hard contact rate, StatCast numbers. He should start to turn this thing around a little bit. Rhys Hoskins is going to be coming up from the minor leagues very soon. He's killing it in AAA. This could be a buy team if the rotation gets it together. Now, of course, another problem for the Phillies is that the bullpen is a dumpster fire full of burning tires. It is horrible. It is so, so bad. They've already gone through a couple different closers. Joaquin Benoit got shelled yesterday. The bullpen is awful. There's really not a whole lot that you can do to fix a bad bullpen over the course of a season. You can experiment with guys in different roles, but it's really an area that you need to fix, you know, over the offseason. When you talk about hitters, you know, you can bring up position player prospects. Guys are going to slump. Guys are going to get better. Guys are going to get worse, stuff like that. Starting pitchers, you know, you're throwing 200 innings, 190 innings. You've got time to work out your issues. When it comes to the bullpen, fixes on the fly generally don't happen all that much. You know, there will be some natural regression in some instances, but overall, it's something you need to address in the offseason, whether you convert a starter to reliever, whether you make some free agent acquisitions or some trades. But the Phillies are in a really difficult spot right now with this bullpen, and so are some of the other teams out there that are having some lackluster relief performances. One other series, a couple more series actually to dig into beyond the box score here. The Cardinals, they sweep the Marlins. Cardinals are on fire right now. Weird line move in the finale. I'll discuss that down the lines a little bit later. But St. Louis, 22 runs in this series. Marlins, only 14. But I guess that's still pretty good for a three-game series, about 4.5 runs per game. So the offense is still there. But the starting pitching for the Marlins is a mess right now. Dan Straley was pretty good yesterday. Actually, very good over his 7 innings. But Wei Yin Chen is out now. Adam Conley, a guy who I thought had a middle rotation upside this season, has been sent back to AAA. Clearly the death of Jose Fernandez looming so large for this Marlins team. Just such a tragic event there. But you know, as much as the rotation is a concern, and it was a concern coming into the season anyway, the Marlins bullpen has been a massive disappointment to me. Kyle Barraclough, a terrible outing the other day. You know, A.J. Ramos has been okay. He's been up and down. I really thought this Marlins bullpen would be much stronger. David Phelps, a guy that they should probably consider putting in the rotation at this point with some of their injuries and problems like that. But they need him in the bullpen because the bullpen hasn't been very good. I expected this Marlins bullpen to be dominant. It has not been as of yet. I still think it can get to that point. But for now, you know, I know the Marlins are a sharp team. They've been backed by sharp money several times over the last several weeks. But I just can't do it. You know, I like them. I like some of the pieces and components of this pitching staff, but the total package just isn't there. You know, this is a team that's going to score 8 runs and lose 9-8, going to not score and lose 3-2. It's just one of those things. It just happens because everything isn't working in perfect harmony right now for them. Now, everything's working in perfect harmony for the Cardinals right now. How about this? So I talked about the Cardinals, I believe it was on last Monday's show, or maybe last Thursday's show, something like that. I talked about their BABIP with runners in scoring position. They were at 245. They were the fifth lowest in Major League Baseball. Okay, so coming out of the Braves series, they went from 245 to 255. In this series, St. Louis, 14 for 40 with runners in scoring position. Yes, they had 40 at-bats with runners in scoring position in this three-game series. Now, all of a sudden, their BABIP with RISP, 279. So in two series, the Cardinals have raised their batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position by 34 points. Now, look, when you talk about regression, it doesn't always happen that quickly. Sometimes it's a lot more of a gradual process. But look for some of those outliers in those high leverage plate appearances and look to play on them, whether it's full game, team totals, game totals, something like that. You look at the bottom five right now, the Padres, who obviously aren't a very good team, the Blue Jays, who are missing three key components with Josh Donaldson, Russell Martin, and Troy Tulowitzki on the shelf, the Indians at 242, the Royals at 244, who I'll talk about here in a little bit, and then the Cubs also at 244. So offensively, the Cubs should get this thing going a little bit in the coming weeks. So, you know, again, regression is not a certainty. At least not in the short term. In the long term, everything's going to regress to some sort of reasonable level. But when you look at the Cardinals have done here, that's just one example of what some of these teams can do when they have some of these signs of positive regression in their profiles. One more series to look at here, Nationals and Orioles. This is actually a four-game series, but it's split into two because Baltimore was at home first. Now Washington is at home. Orioles up 2-1 here in this series. They won both at home. The Nationals bullpen has some serious issues, though, and this is a really tough area for me because I'm a big believer in using your best reliever in the highest leverage spot at that point in the game. I believe in the concept of relief aces, an Andrew Miller, a Chris Davinsky, a guy like that. I don't like this archaic hierarchy of bullpen roles where you know, this guy's your seventh inning guy. This guy's your eighth inning guy. This guy's your ninth inning guy. You know, I hate the save statistic, but I will say this. What makes it so hard for me is that while I don't personally like it, I understand that that comfort level needs to be there for relief pitchers in some instances. It all depends on the personnel that's there, but a lot of guys like to know when they're coming into the game. They like, you know, they have routines. Some guys get up and start loosening up a little bit in the fourth inning if they know that they're probably coming in the seventh. Andrew Miller is one of these guys. He jogs, stretches out a little bit, back and forth in the bullpen, you know, when he's waiting to get into the game. But when you look at the Nationals here, and this may provide some credence to this point that I'm talking about, this bullpen has been in a constant state of flux all year. Okay, Dusty Baker took a long time determining who he wanted to be the closer, pulled him from the role right away, sort of had a closer by committee type of setup. And then Eddie Romero comes out, blows a save the other night. Orioles walked that game off. You know, you've got Matt Albers getting some save ops. Blake Treinen's sort of working in middle relief now. You know, nobody really knows when they're coming in. And I kind of wonder if that's why this Nationals bullpen has had so many problems. Because guys just can't get into the right mindset. They're kind of sitting out there wondering, okay, we have a lead. It's a close game. Am I coming in today? You know, is Blake coming in today? Is Blanton coming in today? Who's coming in? We don't know. It's been something very difficult for the Nationals to get around here this season, and it's hurt them in a negative way. I mean, this is a team scoring 6 runs per game. You know, they realistically could be much better than they are, but they've had some blown saves. They've had some situations where the bullpen's given up some games. It's tough. It's a tough line for me to walk as somebody that, you know, believes in the numbers, as somebody that studies the numbers, and somebody that believes in regression analysis handicapping. You know, this is one of those things that cannot really be quantified. It's speculation on my part, but I have to think that there's some credence to it. I have to think that these Nationals relievers just want some stability, and they don't have it right now. And then it becomes one of those things where the media blames the players, and they say, well, get your job done. People will support Dusty Baker and say, oh, he's just looking for somebody that can get outs. But maybe guys could be getting outs if they had more well-defined roles. So it's a slippery slope there. It's something that, you know, I'm going to watch as we go throughout the season. Again, it's not really something that I can necessarily quantify, but I will be paying attention to it. And it's interesting to talk about it in the context of this series, because you have Dusty Baker, who I'm not a fan of as a manager. I really don't like the way that he's leveraged relievers throughout his managerial tenure. On the other hand, you've got Buck Showalter. The Orioles seem to regularly have great bullpens, and he leverages his relievers well. You know, take away, of course, last year's wildcard game with Zach Britton. But Showalter's a guy that has built up that rapport, built up that respect, and he uses guys in the roles that they're designed to be used in. You know, I have a criticism of Terry Francona. I have a lot of criticisms of Terry Francona, but he does that. He uses his relievers in situations where they expect to be used, and the Indians' bullpen's been very good on his watch for the most part, and it's elite this season. So, maybe there is something to that. Maybe there is something to that bullpen hierarchy role. Of course, talent plays a big role, too. I mean, you need the horses to go out there and get you the outs. But I'll be curious to see how long Buck Showalter stays with Brad Brock. So Brock has taken over the closer's role with Zach Britton on the shelf. Brock has not pitched well here in this series. You know, will he make a move to go to somebody like a Michael Givens? Will he go by committee based on matchups with Darren O'Day, you know, and maybe one of the lefties that's out there? You know, I don't know how Showalter is going to play this. He probably wants to keep it as stable as possible. But it's interesting to see that dichotomy at play there with two managers that, you know, one that can manage a bullpen and one that absolutely cannot. So bullpens, just so important here nowadays. I want to focus on a couple of things with the bullpens here today. And I want to start with this. I can see regression for offenses. I can see regression for starting pitchers. Bullpens are much, much harder to figure out. There's so much inherent volatility with bullpens. It's about manager leverage. You've got sample size noise in there. Some teams just simply have better relief options than others. But there are some significant outliers out there that I do want to point you towards and, you know, look at some of these teams and see if maybe we can come up with some areas where maybe we get some live betting opportunities. But again, bullpens are one of the great unknowns for me when it comes to handicapping. It's just so hard to figure out, you know, who's going to be used when. You try to keep up on the usage, see who's unavailable, who should be available, stuff like that. It's very, very hard. However, there are a few things I can point you towards. So league average left on base percentage for individual relievers last season, that's all of them across the board, 74%. There were 19 teams last year out of the 30 that were north of 74% left on base percentages as a bullpen unit. So what we're seeing here with the specialization of the game is that overall the strength of bullpens is much, much higher than the strength of individual relievers. That shouldn't come as a big surprise because, again, with the specialization of the game, you know, guys are throwing harder. There's more emphasis on developing relief pitchers, so there are more above-average relievers out there. But I'll say this. As I said, last year, 19 of the 30 teams, 74% or higher. We have some teams this year with very, very low left on base percentages from the bullpen. The Atlanta Braves, 64.9%. Kansas City Royals, 65.5%. Colorado Rockies, which is very strange to me because of how good that bullpen's been, 66.2%. Tampa Bay, 66.3%. Detroit Tigers, 67.2%. Now, look, there are some very bad relievers on these five teams. The Tigers clearly have a bad bullpen. The Royals do not have a good bullpen this season. They haven't even been able to use Kelvin Herrera as a closer, really, because they haven't had a whole lot of leads. The Braves, not a good bullpen. Tampa Bay, not a particularly strong bullpen. However, there was one team last season that had a team left on base percentage as a bullpen unit below 70%. That was the Colorado Rockies at 67.8%. So what that tells me is that no matter how bad the composition of your bullpen is, overall, they're still going to strand about 70% of their runners. So when you have these bullpens that are major outliers early in the year, like we have these five that I just talked about, you should expect to see some positive regression from those groups, whether it's just guys getting more familiar with roles, whether it's, you know, personnel changes, stuff like that. We had one team last year out of 30 that had a left on base percentage below 70%. So if you see some of those teams here this year, and there are five of them that I just talked about, and there are others as well, those are some spots where we should see some positive regression from those bullpens. Now, last year's highest left on base percentage as a bullpen was the Seattle Mariners at 78.2%. We have five teams above that right now: the White Sox, Indians, Cubs, Orioles, and Astros. Four of those teams have four of the best bullpens in baseball. It's the Indians, Cubs, Orioles, and Astros. The White Sox, I would expect regression from the White Sox bullpen to come pretty quickly here. You know, they have had some guys like Nate Jones has pitched very well. David Robertson's a trade candidate. But, you know, they're not going to carry an 82% left on base percentage. So the White Sox, maybe a team you might want to look to bet against from a live betting standpoint if they've got a lead here over the next couple of weeks while some regression sinks in with that number. So, you know, again, it's very hard to project a whole lot about bullpens. You know, I tell you all the time, my primary goal in handicapping is to eliminate as much variance as possible. But eliminating bullpen variance is so hard to do. You know, like I talked about, I thought the Marlins would be an elite bullpen this year. They're not. The Cardinals, should have a very good bullpen. It's been average. You know, the Indians and Astros were supposed to have good bullpens, and they do. So it's tough. But the point of this exercise is mostly to encourage you to look for outliers. Do your due diligence. Go out there. Sort by the column headers on FanGraphs. Find those outliers where regression is at the very least expected, and look for angles to play on or against those teams. Like I said, I mean, it's not a foolproof plan, but when you look at the range from last year, you know, an 11% range from highest with the Mariners at 78.2% to lowest with the Rockies at 67.8%. And this year, your range right now is over 17%. So that's not going to continue. So again, you look for those outliers, you just play the numbers, you play the percentages, you play the expectations, and you hope that you're on the right side of the regression coin that day. All right, so let's go down the lines here, look at some of the line moves that have happened since I was last on the air on Monday. People bought into Jake Arrieta. Tuesday was very frustrating to me. We had a great spot to fade the Cubs on Monday night. Arrieta, Senzatella, Cubs coming off Sunday Night Baseball, 18-inning game. Mother Nature intervened, didn't want us to win that bet. So that game gets pushed to Tuesday afternoon. Now, if you stuck with it, you got a winner there with the Rockies because Jake Arrieta wasn't very good. But the market came in on Arrieta. And I've talked about this before, but so many of these line moves, solely driven by the ERA and xFIP discrepancy, you have to apply context to that. You just have to do it. You know, Arrieta's a guy that, yeah, he's got a low xFIP, he's got a high strikeout rate and a low walk rate, but the command isn't there, the velocity is down. He's got some regression coming in his zone contact percentage. People don't dig that deep. You know, some of these model guys just won't dig that deep because they're going to get some of the expected numbers based on some of those primary components of FIP and xFIP, and they're going to miss some of the context. So that's what I like about this show. You know, you can get different perspectives. You can see different things out there in the market, but ultimately you want the complete picture, and I feel like I'm able to provide that complete picture for you here. Didn't see enough of a Jared Weaver fade in my mind on Tuesday. Jared Weaver is not good. The market's going to keep fading him. Wasn't a big fade yesterday, but I think we start to see bigger and bigger fades as we go along here. Another one with an ERA and xFIP play on Jeff Samardzija against the Mets. That was against Zach Wheeler. That one didn't work. I liked Wheeler in that spot. I like Wheeler going forward here a little bit. Samardzija will get better, but you know, there's always something to why the ERA is high and the xFIP is low. A lot of times it's command. You know, you like to point to a high home run to fly ball percentage and say, well, it's going to regress. Yeah, it probably will. But you got to start throwing better pitches. Samard just left too many balls center cut, and opposing hitters have taken advantage. You know, I don't think his strikeout rate's sustainable anyway. So again, context. Cannot stress this enough. Saw some Milwaukee money come in against left-handed pitcher Drew Pomerantz and the Boston Red Sox. Expect to see that going forward. It's happening again today. Eduardo Rodriguez on the mound for the Red Sox. He throws left-handed. Milwaukee, very right-handed heavy lineup. Again, just put that note in your mind when the Brewers are facing a lefty. If you want to get out in front of a line move, go ahead and hit them right away. Saw some money come in against Bartolo Colon. This may have been a buy on the Astros, which we saw regularly throughout this series against the Braves. But, you know, for Bartolo Colon here, he turns 44 this month. The skills are in decline. The walk rate is up. The command is down. Just a natural thing here. I mean, I give him credit. He's had a phenomenal career. He's going to cross 3,300 innings in his next start, or I think in his next two starts, I believe. It's a phenomenal career. But age catches up with everybody. And age has caught up with Bartolo Colon. I think we see that fade keep going here as long as he's a part of this Braves rotation. And it should be throughout the year because the Braves have a tremendous farm system of pitching talent. They're not going to burn anyone's arms this season. Colon will be out there to take his lumps and throw 170, 180 innings if his body lets him. And they're probably not going to be very good innings at the end of the day. Saw the Kyle Freeland fade in the nightcap there on Tuesday. Another part of that is people, when you look at a doubleheader, people will tell you it's very hard to sweep a doubleheader. So money will almost always come in on the team that lost game one. The Cubs were that team. I like to think it was a Kyle Freeland fade because I'm looking to fade Kyle Freeland. But the Cubs did win that game, and John Lackey pitched pretty well in that outing. Wednesday, we saw money come in on the Mets against the Giants. I don't know if this was a Matt Cain fade. I don't know if this was a Giants fade. I don't know if it was a lineup play. But to see steam come in on Tommy Malone is very, very interesting, to say the least. Giants wound up winning that one off of the Mets bullpen. Once again, saw Houston money come in against the Braves. Like I said, I think the Braves are getting faded in the marketplace right now. They were getting bought a little bit earlier in the year. Turns out they're not a very good team. I think we keep seeing money come in against Atlanta as we go forward. Huge move, about a 30-cent line move here on Andrew Triggs and the Oakland A's against the LA Angels of Anaheim. The market has isolated Oakland as a team to back. I talked about this on, I believe, Monday's show. Per base runs and Pythagorean win-loss, the A's have been a pretty unlucky team here so far this season. Andrew Triggs has taken on money several times here this season already. Probably a trend that will continue. But again, the odds makers pick up on these things. They pick up on pitchers that are getting money with regularity. Triggs is one of them. Maybe we start to see an adjustment in some of those opening lines. So a move on Danny Salazar. That was an ERA to XFIP play last night. Blue Jays walked that one off of Cody Allen, who's been struggling a little bit here of late, had a 32-pitch inning there on the ninth against Blue Jays. But for Salazar, again, this is one of those where you look at the ERA, you look at the XFIP, and you expect the ERA to regress positively. But I talk about this all the time. The ERA to XFIP regression assumes a competent level of command. Danny Salazar just doesn't have command right now. He's been not good in the first couple innings of his starts this season. Elite arsenal. Tons of swing and miss. Ball's coming out with a lot of life. But the command just is not there. And I don't know when it will be there. Incredibly frustrating for me as an Indians fan to see guys like Danny Salazar and Trevor Bauer that have elite raw arsenals. Great movement. You know, stuff that should be hard to center on. But too many things leak out over the middle of the plate. Just not enough command. It's not enough to have good stuff and good control. And those guys don't even have good – they don't have great control by any means. But command just means so, fastball command especially. And Salazar's fastball command just has not been there this season. People have been laying big prices with him. I'm not going to do it. I get it. You know, he has that elite upside. Man, he's got no command. And it's frustrating. Cardinals fade and then a Marlins buy. This was the weird line move I was talking about. So yesterday in the Cardinals-Marlins game, you know, I was expecting Marlins money because the Cardinals have been faded by the sharp players and the Marlins have been bought by the sharp players. And by sharp players, I mean the guys that get in early, play the numbers early on. Yesterday, though, we saw Cardinals money come in first and then saw a big wave of Marlins money after that. Surprising to see that because the Cardinals are going to be a public team. I don't know if this was an arbitrage play to grab numbers, to massage the market a little bit. But then I saw where the number closed, and I thought, okay, well, that makes more sense. Strange, strange line move. But again, you know, I would expect to see the Cubs take on money this weekend here against the Cardinals, because the market just doesn't seem to love the Cardinals a whole lot this season. So a little bit of money come in against Kyle Kendrick, but it certainly wasn't enough. Brewers wound up knocking him around. And then a big Tigers fade on Wednesday night. Matt Boyd, Zach Godley. I had a listener reach out about this play. He had a strong angle on it. Hopefully he wound up playing it. I didn't, because I wasn't sure what we were going to get from Zach Godley. It was a bad, bad spot for the Tigers. And the Diamondbacks obviously made it pay. So looking at Thursday here, we're seeing some money come in on Jason Vargas against Jake Odorizzi. The Royals are historically bad on offense right now. I wrote about that in my picks analysis piece over at bangthebook.com, so check that out. The Rays are a team I'm looking to fade against left-handed pitching. You know, they can't use guys like Corey Dickerson on Brad Miller at the top of the order in that spot. Colby Rasmus as well. He's off to a good start since he came back from injury. Steven Souza Jr. is out. He's probably their best hitter against lefties, at least right now. I mean, Evan Longoria is pretty good as well. But not a surprise to see this line move here coming in against the Rays. Seeing some Nationals money trickle in on A.J. Cole. Looks like a fade of Dylan Bundy. I don't get it. I don't agree with it. And I just talked about the Nationals' bullpen problems here. If that number keeps going, I think the Orioles look like a play tonight. Seeing some money come in on Gerrit Cole and the Pirates against Zach Greinke and the Diamondbacks. Don't get this one at all. Might be a blind buy on the Pirates' offense having some positive regression, because they've been almost as bad as the Royals this year. I love what Gerrit Cole has done this season, but I also love what Zach Greinke's done this year. So if Greinke keeps going lower into that minus 120, minus 125 range, I think the Diamondbacks are a look to buy here tonight. The market buying Bronson Arroyo and the Reds against the Giants. Cross-country trip home for the Giants after a long road trip. Decent park for Bronson Arroyo if such a thing exists. But, you know, I won't be putting my hard-earned money on Bronson Arroyo, I can tell you that. My pick here for tonight, I'm going to go with the Colorado Rockies. The Dodgers are sending Hyunjin Ryu to the mound. Tyler Anderson goes for the Rockies. Ryu has been steamed a few times this season, and I don't quite get it. 405 ERA, 490 FIP, 329 XFIP. Underlying metrics like him, but an 87.4% left on base percentage, yet he has an ERA over 4. It's because of command, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is about command when it comes to pitchers. Ryu doesn't have any right now. Lots of home runs allowed. Still trying to get into a rhythm because he's basically missed the last 2 years. When you talk about bad command, when you talk about Coors Field, not a good mix. Anderson, positive regression coming here for him. Really bad start. He's getting it back together a little bit here. I think he starts to get back to his ground ball stylings a little bit more. Dodgers have struggled with lefties. Look, I might just have to start buying Colorado. I mean, I'll keep fading Kyle Freeland. But what Colorado's doing has a level of sustainability to it. You know, I mean, the bullpen's been really good. Greg Holland looks healthy, looks good. Adam Ottavino is a great setup guy. I might just have to let my guard down a little bit here and start looking at Colorado as a team to buy. Now, of course, when that happens, generally they become a team that goes in the shitter and then you want to fade them. But, you know, I'm at least buying Colorado today. So we'll see what happens here throughout the rest of the weekend. I want to talk a little bit about some of these plate discipline metrics. I refer to these a lot. I just want to go a little bit more in depth here. If you're looking at FanGraphs, the generic plate discipline numbers come from Baseball Info Solutions. PitchFX obviously comes from PitchFX. I trust PitchFX a bit more. One of the things about Baseball Info Solutions data is that a lot of it is tracked by hand, so you get some human error in there. But I just want to talk about some of these major components. O swing percentage is also known as chase rate. It's percentage of pitches swung at outside the strike zone. It's a good sign if you have a high O-swing percentage as a pitcher. It means your breaking balls have life, your fastballs have life, hitters are off balance, you're in a lot of two-strike counts to where you can expand the zone. League average with that metric right now, 30.4%. Anything below that, you know, it might be a guy that's just a control artist, he throws a lot of strikes, or it might be a guy whose breaking balls just aren't getting swung at right now. So you look for outliers. Again, outliers in all of these metrics, very, very important. High chase rates, you know, means guys with good breaking balls, guys with good stuff. Hitters aren't picking the ball up real well. Those are guys that can induce a lot of weak contact and a lot of swings and misses. Those are guys that you want to look to back, both from a betting standpoint and then also from a daily fantasy standpoint. Z-swing percentage is zone swing percentage. Are hitters off balance? You know, good sequencing from the pitcher, good movement, too many hittable pitches. Zone swing percentage, league average right now, 64.2%. Again, look for outliers, find out the reasons why. Swing percentage, that's obvious, 46.3% is the league average. You know, our pitchers don't want a lot of swings, unless they're going to be swings and misses. You know, so if the swing percentage is really low, do they have bad control? Swing percentage is really high. Are they throwing too many strikes? Too many strikes, usually a bad thing. Even though we're in an era where swings and misses are ups as much as they are, you still don't want guys teeing off in the zone more often than not. O contact percentage, contact on pitches outside of the strike zone. Are hitters making contact when they chase? Can be a good thing and a bad thing. You know, you want swings and misses. You want the ability to put guys away. But at the same time, when guys are expanding the zone, when guys are putting bad pitches in play, get a lot of weak contact, weak ground balls, pop-ups, all that type of stuff. League average right now, 59.4% with that. Zone contact percentage is obvious, contact in the zone. You want guys that can get away with mistakes or throw it past hitters. You know, guys with premium velocity, guys with breaking balls that can start at the front hip and then bring them over the inside corner, stuff like that. This year, zone contact percentage is down to 83.9%. It's interestingly low, actually. It's down a full percent from last year and down 1.4% over the last 5 years. So I'm kind of curious if that's a number that will normalize a little bit here this year. Of course, contact is down across the board. But again, you want guys that can get away with pitches in the zone, you know, that can throw strikes, but quality strikes. Zone contact percentage to me, you know, I had a listener ask about some of the good metrics for trying to quantify command. Zone contact percentage to me, I think, is a pretty good one. Because if you can get swings and misses inside the zone, it means you're throwing quality strikes. You're living on the edges. You know, you're setting guys up. You're putting pitches where you want to put them. So zone contact percentage is one where I think you can get some pretty good indicators. And then finally, zone percentage. Now, if you're going off Baseball Info Solutions, it's based on their zone. Or if you're going off PitchFX, it's based off their zone. But I like zone percentage because it can be a good injury indicator. If you've got a guy that throws a lot of strikes traditionally and he's not doing it this year, well, he's probably hurt. Probably changed his arm slot, maybe working on some different grips to keep some strain off the elbow, stuff like that. Zone percentage is most important to me in that regard, where I'm looking for injury indicators. But you can also find some outliers. You know, is a guy getting an inordinate number of swinging strikes? Because some guys, you know, they throw a lot of pitches in the zone, then all of a sudden their swinging strike rate goes up. You start thinking, well, that's weird. You know, why aren't hitters making contact with pitches to hit? Well, that may be an area where you look for some regression. So I think you can find out a lot of good things from these plate discipline metrics. And again, like I said, I think injury indicators, one of the biggest ones. All right, so what am I looking at this weekend? Well, the Houston Astros take on the New York Yankees, 4-game series in the Bronx. Could this be an ALDS preview? Could this be an ALCS preview? Well, we'll have to wait and find out. Great pitching matchup. Thursday night. Dallas Keuchel, Michael Pineda there in that one. Friday, Lance McCullers Jr. and Jordan Montgomery. Saturday, Mike Fiers, Luis Severino. Sunday, Charlie Morton, Masahiro Tanaka. That is Sunday night baseball. Houston goes to Miami, so it could be a tough spot there for them. Day off for the Yankees on Monday. So in terms of looking at situational angles, maybe one on Houston. You know, if we get a late game there in the Bronx on Sunday, they have to make a long trip down to Miami. Could be a bad spot for them. Also, Houston would lose the services of the DH there with interleague play. But lots of swing and miss guys in this series. Two powerful lineups. Some good young hitters. Lots of stuff to pay attention to here in this series. Should be a really good one. Seattle and Toronto. A couple of patchwork rotations here. Patchwork lineups as well. Patchwork Seattle rotation. Can the Seattle offense stay hot? Jays are starting to play a little bit better, but now Kendrys Morales is hurt. They're already without Russell Martin, Josh Donaldson, and Troy Tulowitzki. Tons of really bad hitters at the bottom of the order for this Toronto team. These pitching matchups are something. Chase DeJong, Marco Estrada tonight. Christian Bergman, Joe Biagini on Friday. Dylan Overton, Marcus Stroman Saturday. Ariel Miranda, Aaron Sanchez on Sunday. Pitching matchups do favor the Blue Jays quite a bit, but this Seattle offense has gotten it going, so I'll be curious to see how that series plays out. One more series here, the Cubs and Cardinals renew their rivalry. Eddie Butler, Mike Leake on Friday. John Lester, Michael Wacha Saturday. J. Jake Arrieta, Carlos Martinez on Sunday. Can the Cardinals stay hot? Can the Cubs get things in order? The Cardinals have pitching matchup edges in this series. I think money does come in on the Cubs Saturday and Sunday. I don't think people will rush to back Eddie Butler on Friday, but maybe because Mike Leake has some regression signs in his profile. So I think if you like the Cardinals, you wait some of these numbers out. I think the Cardinals do win this series. I like their pitching matchup advantages Saturday and Sunday, even though John Lester has been very good against the Cardinals in his career. Lester doesn't look real sharp right now. So I think the Cardinals, serious price, a decent look here in that one. So I covered a lot of stuff here on today's show, lots of talking points. If you ever have any questions about anything, hit me up on Twitter, at Skating Tripods. And, of course, please send over your questions for the Monday mailbag. That'll be coming your way here after the weekend on May 15th. So I'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, smart, and safe weekend. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the better's box.